Welcome to Spark Your Fire podcast, sparking your interest in Australian property and finance. Now, here's your host, Jazz and David. But before that, let's listen to the quote of the week.
I want you to stop limiting your beliefs. Limiting your beliefs is stunting your growth. Limiting your beliefs is putting you at a halt for you to get to the next level.
Right, another day, another recording. Welcome everyone to the show once again. We've got another special guest on the show today. He's been on the podcast in the past, John Camino. He's a buyer's agent in Sydney and also a man of many other talents, likes to study economics a little bit, which I only found out in one of the episodes we did recently, which we haven't published yet. But some of the things that he's mentioned told me that there was more to it. But before, without delaying it any further, John, welcome to the show once again, mate.
Thanks, Jazz. Good to be here, mate.
It's always a pleasure. So we got connected through Property Buddy, through a common friend, David. He's not here today. By the way, for the listeners, David is a little bit busy today, so he couldn't join us. Last week, we found that there was more to John. John is a bit more than property guy. And John looks at some of the other markets as well, gold and silver being one of them. Is that fair to say, John?
That's very fair to say, yeah, very engaged and interested in those markets.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about how you got introduced to gold, John. Why gold in your portfolio?
Yeah, right, okay. So two questions there. How I personally got interested in it was after 2008 when the financial system crashed, there was a bit of a lie going around in the financial markets that no one saw it coming, that it was this black swan event that no one could have seen. And I that sat uncomfortably with me. But when I looked into it, what was actually more correct was that the gold and silver community, the free market guys, the hard asset guys, they did see it coming. And they were warning against what they saw leading up to 2007, 2008 as monetary disorder. You know, interest rates were too low, the central banks were printing too much money. And as it turns out, that community, those guys, understood exactly what was happening and they prepared accordingly. And there was a book that kind of changed my thinking, and I've read a lot subsequently, but there was a book at the time that was published in 2007 by a guy named Peter Schiff, and I reckon a lot of your listeners would know that guy, right? But Peter Schiff is a bit of a Cassandra, but he was bang on. And in his 2007 book, which is called Crash Proof, he talks about this impending crash. He said, you know, Freddie and Fannie are going to go bust, and you've got amongst other predictions that came true that were quite specific. But he also said, you've got to own gold and silver as an ark of safety. So that's how I kind of got interested initially. And I've been slightly, you know, obsessed ever since. And even though I'm a property buyer's agent, I'm actually, you know, in a sense, more across the gold and silver markets than I am the real estate markets. But I'm interested in the gold and silver markets for mainly the same reasons, really. I mean, I'm interested in tangible representations of wealth. I'm interested in things that can't be printed. And gold and land are kind of similar in the sense that they're both scarce, they're both tangible, but you can't carry land around with you. And, there are a couple of differences. So that's how I got interested in it. You asked why gold. I mean, gold is money. Gold isn't really anything else. I mean, it behaves in certain ways during different financial circumstances, but gold is the oldest money on the planet. Mm-hmm. And when we think of what we think is money, which is the currency, the paper money in our wallets, that's really just a receipt for money. It's like if you put your suit in the dry cleaners and you get the ticket from the dry cleaner. The money in our wallet's like thinking that the ticket's the money, the suit, or the ticket's the suit. It's just a receipt for the suit. But the real money is the gold and silver at the treasury. Everything else is a receipt for money.
That's interesting that you got introduced to it in 2008, and we are currently in a similar environment with COVID and all, right?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on gold currently, and how it will perform over the next couple of years. I'll tell you just before you get started on that, I was looking at some of the charts preparing for our catch up. I looked at the Fed's balance sheet back in 2008, and when it started to expand, pretty much after that, gold started to shoot up, and it went up about 3x from 2008 to 2012. I'm looking at the chart right now. In the last 3 months, Fed's balance sheet, which we did discuss on the previous episode, expanded by about $3 to $4 trillion in the last 2 to 3 months, right? I think from 2nd of March. So it's a very similar environment, right? You have experienced the 2008 markets. I'm really keen to hear your thoughts on where do you see gold heading towards in the next couple of years, maybe?
Yeah. I mean, look, it's a tough question, and I have a view on it. And before I answer it, I want to pick up on something you said that was quite interesting about the Fed's balance sheet. And this is really interesting. And this is like one of the reasons gold is interesting is because it's essentially a study on money. And it's a treasure trove and a rabbit warren of interesting information. But if we look at the US, which is the reserve currency of the world, in terms of what money was printed or what currency was printed from George Washington to George W. Bush, it was 0.8 of a trillion, so about $800 billion worth of money that was created in the economy. And then in 2007, 2008, it went to 4 trillion in about a year. So from 0.8 of a trillion to 4 trillion. And there had been until then no equivalent like money creation or currency creation up until that point in time. They got it down when they started to taper to about 3 trillion and then boom. 2020, and we're back up to about, geez, they did about 3 trillion in a month. They're like crazy numbers. So again, why gold? You want to own real money that can't be printed. So where do I think gold's going? So what's been quite interesting is gold responded really well to QE1 back in 2008, and gold went up quite substantially. And in fact, the bull market started in about 2000. But it didn't really respond to QE2 and 3, and gold has been sort of going sideways ever since. I think that bull markets happen in usually two phases. You've got that stealth run that lasts for about 10 years, and then you get a mid-cycle correction that takes gold down, say, 50%, and then you get the shorter but more explosive run in gold. So, I mean, I think in the next 4 years, but it could be much sooner. I think gold is going to have its big final leg up. Now, the last big bull market in gold was in the 70s, right? And it peaked in 1980. And from about 1976 to about 1980, it went up eightfold. Mm-hmm. So if it was to do that in US dollar terms, gold would go from about $1,700 now to about $10,000. And a lot of people, you hear like guys like Jim Rickards talking about gold getting to $10,000. Yeah, that's kind of how they arrive at those figures. I think it's entirely possible. Mm-hmm. What's also interesting is to see a lot of people say, but gold hasn't done anything. Well, it hasn't done anything in US dollar terms. But if you bought gold with Aussie dollars, you're at all-time highs. Gold in Aussie dollar terms is about $2,600. Mm-hmm. So I think gold's already at all-time highs in virtually every currency except for US dollars. But if we look at the US dollar, I mean, I think that it's I think gold in US dollar terms is going to go up, and probably over the next 4 years. I think gold will probably outperform almost everything, including real estate, over the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we'll see.
That's a big call. And it's looking at what's happening in the markets. It won't surprise if that happens. I mean, like you said, it's a hard asset. It's rare. It's not easy to mine. So, yeah.
I was going to say, look, in the March crash recently, gold went down as well, but it bounced up more quickly than other assets. You know, I mean, the thing about gold is as much as most people acknowledge that gold is an important part of a portfolio and that people should own it and all those sorts of things, but you don't have to own gold in the way that you have to own Australian dollars because you need to buy things at the supermarket and you need to pay taxes and all that sort of stuff. So when they had the market crash a couple of months ago, gold got sold down as well because if you've got margin calls, you need to liquidate everything, including gold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so all the leverage traders basically got washed out in that one. How do you compare gold to silver and silver in this current market?
Yeah, so gold and silver are a bit different. Gold is entirely a monetary asset. I mean, there are a couple of industrial uses in, say, dentistry, but essentially gold's a beautiful thing that people hoard as money. They buy the bars or they buy the jewelry, but it doesn't have that many other uses. Silver, on the other hand, is is extremely useful. It's like the second most useful commodity after oil, and it's in everything that we use. So when you're tapping on a keyboard, you're using silver. When you've got your phone to the ear, you're using silver. All the solar panels on your roof are made out of silver because it reflects and it doesn't rust and those sorts of things. So silver is super useful as an industrial metal. And so while gold trades as a monetary metal only, and so it's like the ultimate fear trade, you know, silver is an industrial metal as well as a monetary metal. So silver got whacked a lot harder in March than gold did. So they're kind of different, and they kind of say that, you know, gold is the money of the central banks, but silver is the money of men, because you can't. Gold is too expensive to divide it up and buy a loaf of bread, but silver you could do that. Now, I don't think we'll ever get to barter, so I don't think it's that sort of commodity, but silver's both, whereas gold is just a monetary metal. Now, silver's really, really ridiculously cheap at the moment. And everyone's got to do their own research, and this is not advice, but there aren't many things on the planet that are cheaper than they were in 1980. Mm. But silver is. And in US dollar terms, silver's about $17, $18 now. But in 1980, it was $50 an ounce. So it's just so cheap. One of the things a lot of precious metals enthusiasts do is they look at the gold to silver ratio. So gold to silver appear in the Earth's crust at about 15 to 1, let's say. But at the moment, it's trading at about 90 to 1, which means gold, which is only 15 times more scarce than silver, is currently 90 times more expensive. Mm-hmm. So there's a thesis out there that silver is like the cheapest thing on the planet at the moment. I don't have an opinion on that in particular, but silver's cheap, mm-hmm. and it's more useful.
Yeah.
Well, it's also a very small market. Silver's tiny. I mean, Warren Buffett got into silver, I can't remember exactly. I think it was the early noughties, and it was at $4 at the time, and he stitched it up with a very small purchase. And so you can move the silver market very easily because it's so small. And the other thing about silver is there aren't that many silver mines. They're usually it's usually a byproduct of extracting other things like nickel and copper and those sorts of things. So no one's going out mining silver. It's mainly a byproduct of other metals.
So in 1971, I think it was when the gold was sort of unpacked from dollar system, right? Do you see, one, any thoughts on that and whether it was a good thing to do or a bad thing to do, or it was just a requirement of the time? And secondly, do you see it ever getting pegged back to the current fiat money system in this crazy money printing world that we are in?
Yeah, right. It's such a good question. So in August 1971, Nixon took the US off the gold standard, and we essentially went on to a US dollar standard after that. Now, he did it because the US started to run current account deficits, and they were running out of gold because they had to settle the debts with gold, and so they were buying more than they were exporting, and so they were losing their gold, mainly back to the Europeans. So he said he cancelled the convertibility into gold in that famous speech. And to my mind, that's kind of the day capitalism died. Like, I think that you can't have a free market without free market money. And that was the day that the central banks totally took over the management of money or of currency. And if you've got, if you manage the currency, you don't have a free market anymore. So that's kind of, I think it's a, I think it's one of the biggest things that happened last century. And, you know, a lot of big things happened last century. So going off the gold standard onto an entirely faith-based monetary system was a big deal, totally big deal. I think it was a bad decision. I think, so what going off a gold standard essentially does is, what a gold standard does do is it puts limitations around government spendings. I mean, when people ask, how is it possible to run a deficit every year permanently forever? There is, why aren't there any restrictions? And the answer to that is that that in a system where you can print money rather than mine it, there is no limitation on a deficit. So the government, particularly in the US, we'll talk about the US now, they can print money until we stop believing in US dollars. Mm-hmm. But under a gold standard, you can only print it to the extent that you have gold in the vaults. Mm-hmm. So we're on an entirely faith-based system at the moment, and I think it was a big mistake. So now, there's no chance that deficits will be reined in the US. I mean, we just saw in the last couple of months that the deficit's probably going to get up to $5 trillion this year. How is that possible?
I think some of the figures have come out to $40 trillion in the next 3-4 years.
Right. So. Oh, it's nuts. So the debts are out of control. And if you have, so we have a, so the alternative to a gold standard is a debt-based monetary system, and the debt's never going to be reined in because we don't have a gold standard. So gold standards are highly flawed as well, I should add. You know, they're not the be-all and end-all, but it does put governments in a straitjacket. They can't print money and they can't create inflation. Mm-hmm. Now, Jazz, what was the second part of your question?
Whether it will actually get pegged again to the fiat money system.
Right. So no, I don't think we'll go back to a gold standard. But there's a caveat to that. It is possible that the market will reassert a gold standard. This happened in 1980, where we went off the gold standard in 1971, but the markets became very nervous during the 70s about the value of the money, and the market pushed the price of gold up so that it essentially remonetized all of the gold in the vault. But it needs to be at a certain price. So the markets could decide that the markets want a gold standard, but that would require $10,000 gold, let's say $20,000 gold. So no politician will ever go onto a gold standard because it means they can't run their deficits, but the market might assert gold's price higher so that we effectively have a gold standard.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. How do you see this panning out? I mean, at what point does this stop? And this is just opinions over here. None of this is financial advice, right? But I'm curious because you're studying, obviously, markets here. You know your stuff that you're talking. But what are your thoughts on, after studying this much, of where is this going to lead us to? What's the end? There's a lot of stuff that's happening currently with the things like rewards, Hong Kong democracy, right? It's all happening at once, crazy when you're crazy. Right? Where is this going to take us to?
Wow. Yeah, look, we're just a couple of lads spitballing here, right? I mean, we don't know. So paper money systems generally, or unanchored money systems, money systems with no discipline that can be just printed into oblivion, usually leads to some sort of social chaos. We know about Weimar Germany, we know about Venezuela, even like in 1970s in the West, when we were getting to that stage where the dollar was starting to die, it leads to social chaos. And it starts out with a big gulf between the rich and the poor, because if you've got a system where you can print as much money as you like rather than create the money. If you can print money, the people who receive the money first become very wealthy because they've received the money before it has changed the value and the price of goods and services. So before it becomes inflation, they've received the money first. And so what you get is inflated asset prices. So people who own assets, financial assets in particular, become very wealthy, and then you get people who are on salaries start to see their standard of living fall because the value of their salary can't keep up with the value of the increase in the price of goods and services. So generally it leads to social chaos. And what we're seeing at the moment is really interesting, right? So is it a race war? Is it an economic riot? I mean, I don't know, but I know that it's related. It's related. And I know that if we had free markets and no central banks, and that's an extreme position, but let's hypothesize for a second, you wouldn't have the inflation, you wouldn't have that discrepancy between the rich and the poor to the same extent. So where do I see it ending? I see high inflation. I see high inflation. You know, when we chatted the other day and you asked me about my view on the real estate market, and I was saying real estate's going to have explosive growth between now and the next 5 years. It's not a good thing. I'm not happy about that. But because there's such a lack of discipline around our money, it's going to make it look like real estate prices are going up. The same thing will happen to gold, but the same thing will happen to bread and movie ticket prices and all these things. So I see high inflation, and ultimately I think there will have to be like a G20 meeting, and this is maybe 5-10 years away, where they come together and they say, we don't want to rely on the US dollar as a store of value because it is no longer a store of value, and we don't want to trust it as a mechanism for conducting international finance. We need another way. But that's not going to happen soon. I think there's going to be inflation, significant inflation, before they decide to reset. And when I say reset, it's not like the end of the world. That happens all the time. It happens every 40 years. You know, there was Bretton Woods, and then there was the 1971 US dollar standard. Before that, it was the gold exchange standard. Then there was another one just before World War I. So every 40 years, there is a reset of the monetary system. And we're kind of due one. Everything will, when we wake up the next day, everything will look the same. Mm-hmm. So it's not the end of the world, but we will just decide what money is for the next 40 years. Mm-hmm. But I think before we get to that, there'll be some significant inflation and some social. I think that there's social upheaval. I think that's a part of it.
Do you see it to be crazy inflation like Germany saw it back in whatever year it was, Weimar inflation they call it, or which is essentially hyperinflating the currency, or it will just be the inflation that we see to 3%, 4% range?
No, I don't see it like the Weimar hyperinflation that was 1921 to 1922. I mean, I don't see that. Partly because all the money that gets printed doesn't go into consumer prices. The money that gets printed goes into financial assets and other asset prices. So it doesn't necessarily feed into the bread price that makes life difficult. A little bit will, but a lot of it will go into higher house prices and the Dow Jones and the ASX 200, and that's where the inflation will pop up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So, no, I'm not seeing Venezuela. I mean, our markets are far more mature than those countries. Mm-hmm. You know, Weimar Germany was post-war. Everything was flattened, so there was money creation but no production to offset that. So I don't see that happening. People talk about a hyperinflation. I don't see that happening. I just see high inflation.
Okay. Interesting. No one's got the crystal ball, right? But if you were to try and make an attempt on the gold price in the next year or two, whatever time frame you're looking at, right? Where do you see, you already said that gold will probably outperform the real estate market, but where do you see gold sitting at, let's say by end of 2021 or whichever year you are looking at in the future?
Yeah, that's a tough question. And I'd be parroting other, you know, industry insiders rather than, you know, having sat down with the calculator to do it myself. What a lot of people are saying, if we look in US dollar terms, is that it'll probably get to 1900 this year or early next year. No, so 1900 is significant because it was the previous all-time high from 2011. But once it breaks that, there's a perception that it'll go a lot higher very quickly. And, you know, like all bull markets, the last 10% of the time is quick and explosive. So you could get to much higher numbers very quickly. I think ultimately the music stops probably in the next 5 years, but I could be completely wrong on that. And when I say the music stops, I think it will get to $8,000 to $10,000 US.
Right.
Yeah, $8,000 to $10,000 US, something like that. And there's just a stronger case that it won't happen. But if you look at the ratios between the amount of gold in the vaults and the amount of money they've created, or the amount of debt that's been created, gold needs to reset higher at some point in time. So I think, look, maybe in US dollar terms, 1900 this year, or just under, and then let's say $8,000 to $10,000 in 5 years.
Right. And any price predictions on silver?
Well, silver moves later, but it moves bigger. So, yeah, I mean, in that time frame, it'll probably get to $100. $100 silver, which sounds crazy, but it's not necessarily. So if we say in five years' time, we'll have $100 silver up from, let's say, $17 now. Yep, that's about right. Maybe a bit, maybe more, maybe $200. Sounds crazy. But look, I mean, silver's an extremely small, shallow market, and it's extremely undervalued, I think. So, yeah, that's where the big moves are.
It sounds big, but it's not really when you compare it to the balance sheet. Feds, it's all directly related to the Fed's balance sheet. Is it the dollar fiat system that's going down, or is it the hard assets that are going up? It's that you can flip this whole thing on its head and look at a very different way, and the opinions and the perspective will change, I think, pretty fast.
You're 100% right. So it's how much value can our money lose? You know, the other way to look at it is, you know, our houses are going up at 6% per year in terms of price. But unless you've added a story, what exactly is happening? Like, why is my house becoming more expensive when I haven't renovated the kitchen or I haven't put a story on top? What exactly is happening? And the answer to that is that the money is changing value, the house isn't. Right? And the same is with gold. I'm not sure where the price will go, but it's actually not the price of gold that's moving. The price of gold is just a slab of yellow metal. It's not changing at all. It's the value of the money that's going up and down. The example that I mentioned, Jim Rickards, before, he wrote that famous book, Currency Wars, which is becoming 10 years old now. But that's a book really that's worth reading. Currency Wars is fascinating. But Jim Rickards says, to your point, like, what's moving? And he said that the example is, if you're on a boat and you're looking back at shore, it looks like the shore's moving up and down. But if you're on the shore and you're looking at the boat, it looks like the boat's moving up and down. Mm. So, but only one of them is. And in reality, the gold is the shore. The gold isn't moving. It's the currency that's bobbing up and down.
It's just, if you change your perspective a little bit, things change pretty fast of how the world is working, isn't it?
Yeah. If you look at real estate, and people say, oh, it could never go, it couldn't double from here. You know, real estate supposedly doubles every 10 years. How does that happen? Well, it happens because our money is being inflated. It's losing value. And because you can always devalue a currency, house prices can, in theory, always go up.
I really enjoyed your knowledge in this space, to be honest. I'm not going to bring you to discuss property anymore. That's sure.
Too boring. Yeah.
But now we'll try and work something out on a monthly basis, mate. And maybe charts as well into it. I appreciate your time. Anything else that you want to add before we wrap this up?
No, just the pleasure was mine. I mean, I really enjoy the chat, so it'd be great to do it anytime.
Awesome. To our listeners, hope you guys are enjoying the content. If you are, please don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and let the word spread like fire. Spark your fires. Cheers, Jazz. Bye.
If you have any questions or feedback about today's episode, you can reach out to us through sparkyourfirepodcast@gmail.com. That's sparkyourfirepodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. Also, the content discussed in this episode is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals in regards to your personal situation. fireyourfirepodcast@gmail.com. That's sparkyourfirepodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. Also, the content discussed in this episode is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals in regards to your personal situation.